So hello and welcome to another Future Pharmacist Conference session. And hopefully an entertaining one coming up here. We've got several world exclusives about to drop on this conference session. So brace yourselves. I'm containing myself with excitement. Three celebrities on the line here. The very nice to be joined by the Oral Apothecaries tonight. Pharmacy and healthcare podcast sensations, absolute sensations. But joking aside, the podcast has done really, really well. And we were just discussing beforehand where exactly the Oral Apothecaries sit in the pharmacy or healthcare and medicines podcast scene, and it's definitely on the positive end. So I'm gonna hand over and let everyone introduce themselves. We've got Steve, Paul, and Jamie. Do you want to do a round the houses and introduce yourselves, and just in case folk don't know you? Steve, do you want to go first?
Yeah, hi everybody. I'm Steve, otherwise known as Steve the Chemist. Currently working in general practice down in Bournemouth. Previously to that, worked for 25 years in the hospital sector.
Paul?
Yeah, so Paul Gibson, I think Gimmo, as most people know me. Pharmacist, improvement advisor in Cardiff, originally from the northwest of England.
And finally, Jamie.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jamie Hayes, known as Jamie Hayes. I'm a pharmacist.
The inspiration behind the podcast, as you described yourself recently, wasn't it, Jamie?
If you'd watched it, you'd see that wasn't correct. Was it? No. They're not bitter, Jonathan. They're not bitter. Jamie Hayes, pharmacist, day job as director of the Welsh Medicines Resource Centre and an honorary senior lecturer in the School of Medicine and the School of Pharmacy in Cardiff University.
Very good, very good. I sense some disquiet. They do say three's a crowd. Is there a bit of a power struggle going on in the Oral Apothecaries, or am I just looking for a story there?
I think we all know who's in charge.
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, Jonathan.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair to Jamie, I think Jamie and Gimmo were the first ones that talked about doing a podcast, weren't you guys? And then they asked me, but people are surprised when we tell them that Gimmo and I have actually never met. We've only ever talked on Zoom for the podcast. We've never actually met.
God, it's either going to be absolutely amazing or a total disappointment, or hopefully somewhere in between.
It'll be great. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, listen, I'm sure it'll be great. Listen, no, it's good to have you on, and yeah. So first exclusive is, I don't think you've ever, the Oral Apothecaries have ever been on video before, have you?
I don't know. I don't think we have, no. I think we've put some pictures on Twitter, maybe.
Is it for that, Jonathan?
Yeah, we've all got faces for radio.
Well, I think we make quite a lot of the fact we're three middle-aged, out-of-touch blokes. So I guess here's the proof.
Yeah.
I don't, joking aside, I think you're far from out of touch. I think some of the stuff you're putting out in the podcast has been really, really fascinating, really interesting, some cool guests. It's been really good. So why did you start the podcast? Does someone want to take that question?
I don't know, we were talking about it years ago, weren't we? Oh, not to speak for Jamie, but he's dabbled in it before, much to our amusement when we heard some of the earlier recordings. But we were talking about it a couple of years ago, weren't we? And it was, I think it was just as a way of, so me and Jamie have worked on and off together for years, and we're always looking at sort of new and different ways to get medicines information out there and to be interesting and to spread the word. And so we just started talking about a podcast, and then Jamie had mentioned to me a technique that Steve had used in his workshops, which was the desert island drugs and the was it Dud Steve?
Dirty, useless. Drugs.
And my first instinct was, well, I'm pinching that. Not shall we invite him on the podcast? Obviously, Jamie's nicer than I am, and so, and then COVID hit, and I think like a lot of people, you had that weird combination of being very busy, but also having more time on your hands, and or different sort of time on your hands, and so it all kicked off from there, really.
Yeah, the bit that sort of brought it all together, Jonathan, is that one of my neighbours is a former Welsh rugby player who runs a very successful podcast, Flats and Shanks. And so Shanks is one of my neighbours, and I saw how he started recording their podcast during lockdown, and I was just intrigued by the piece of software that he was using. And so I bumped into him outside and asked him, I said, oh, I got a technical question for you. And he was what is it? And so I said, what's the software you're using to record your podcast? And he said, bloody hell, he said, that is a technical question. He said, I was expecting something about the breakdown or something about about the tackle area. But
he's 50-20 rule.
So he introduced me to that piece of software. I went away and had a quick play with it and thought, oh God, that works. And so all of a sudden that became a real enabler for realizing that we could hook up, record together in HD sound, and then it got going from there. Then,
great stuff. It's a great way to connect. I mean, I suppose the Pharmacy in Practice one is a bit more, it's a bit different to your one, isn't it? It's a bit more newsy and a bit more opinion and maybe a bit more political. There's quite a lot of political itches I try to scratch at times. And one of the things it leads me on to my next question, I guess, is one of the things I've really like loved and enjoyed about my podcast is, I'm not going to ask you this because I think you agree, like it's a much better format for, you know, discussing like complex issues that might, you know, out of context might offend folk, you know, and I don't think that's, you know, that's none of our intention, but One of the really enjoyable things is the global aspect to what I've, you know, to our podcast and some of the folk, I don't know if it's the same, I'm sure it's the same for you, but some of the folk I've met through it. I mean, I did one with Zubin Austin in America or Canada, I think. You can connect so readily and have conversations. So in that sort of, Paul's coming in. Paul,
look, go on, ask the question. Sorry, I thought. Go on, carry on. Sorry.
I was just getting going. In that spirit. I don't want you to say who's your favourite, because that's not a very good question. But like, were there any guests that came on the Oral Apothecary that really moved you, or you know? Made you really deeply reflect on either yourself or your practice or your life in general?
One of the things, so when we started, it was, you know, I think Jamie's phrase was pub-based CPD, and it was, you know, we're missing that chat with colleagues because you were sort of isolated and that sort of coffee room, sort of a bit of work and a bit of banter. So, but one of the things that's taken me by surprise is how much I've got back from the people we've had on the podcast, the sort of the learning, the education, the things. And so some things have really been, you know, I mean, well, you know, quite profound, really. So we recently had an episode with Louise Newson, Dr. Louise Newson, who's the menopause doctor. That was really a culmination of a bit of a journey of discovery for us in terms of, you know, Claire Howard, I think in episode 3, was it, took book choice was The Invisible Woman, and she'd given us a bit of a fun, but a bit of a ticking off offline about being sort of three middle-aged blokes and making sure that we weren't too blokey. In fact, I think someone did accuse us of being a bit too blokey. So we thought, well, we need to be wary of that. But actually, when we all read that book and reflected on it and stuff, you know, that was one of the things. And so that's a sort of theme, is there's a few people who've sort of certainly made me think along the way. I don't know, you two boys.
Tim?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated by all the guests, and so I really enjoy listening to people's stories, and that's what we get. And some stories are deeper than others, but when we're recording, you can, you know, and I shared this with a conference audience last week, there can be a few sort of you know, glassy-eyed stares and real sort of lumps in throats when people are being quite vulnerable with us, actually, quite vulnerable and sharing, you know, experiences. And as Gimo said, you know, the learning is as soon as we engage with the guest, really, because all of a sudden you start, you know, that your cognitive biases click in, you start seeing them everywhere, you start seeing their published work everywhere, right the way through to then they, you know, so Louise Newson, the menopause doctor, has been on, and I haven't stopped following her just because she was on a few weeks ago. All of a sudden, it's just a part of my, you know, listen to her podcast and read what she has to say. And for somebody like Louise, she's in, you know, a lot of the media, obviously, because it's such a hugely important topic.
I agree about every guest brings its own, gives its own story. And I think the reason why perhaps people do like it, and we talk about it as being pub CPD, is that I think we all are, three of us are people who like to talk, and I mean, and listen, but we like to have a conversation, and I just see it as a conversation each week. So we do some preparation, of course we do, but we do record it live like this, and there's very little editing. And I worked a little bit some time ago as on a radio station. So I did a show for about 12 episodes over 2 years. And I said to the guys at the beginning, look, you've got to have some structure. So we have a clock, you know, there's a 30-minute clock, and you work out roughly what you're going to cover. But actually, you've got to, as Jamie said, it can become quite vulnerable then. People are opening up. Karen Sankey was a good example, GP who works with homeless people, who got quite a, you know, sounds like she got quite a bad rap where she was working, and she had to leave that area and go and work on the other side of the border. And so we have had some quite vulnerable stories. And I think that, as you know, we're all amateurs, complete amateurs. But as Jamie said, we actually have a duty almost to look after that person when they do go into a vulnerable story. And hopefully we manage that. But yeah, we like to do it live so that we can come off. We never ask people to tell us what their drugs or their career anthem or their books are. We want to come to it live because we're conversationalists at the end of the day, the three of us.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. Jamie, I can really relate to what you said actually about on the simplest level, sort of, you know, when you publish articles written by people, or of which I've done hundreds over the years now, and you know, and podcasts as well, interviews, and you know, that's up into the hundreds now as well. And the way it isn't, I can relate to what you said in the sense that I feel you come into that person's orbit, and some people you come across, you think, gosh, how did I miss this person? You know, this person is sometimes really quietly doing pretty spectacular work, I mean, maybe that's now that you guys have got a podcast and you know, pharmacy in practice exists and stuff, maybe that's something we need to reflect on. How do you find those people or keep finding those people that are doing really impactful work? Where's the podcast going next?
Well, I have. I mean, we'll continue doing what we're doing because it seems to be working, and we say to ourselves, trust the formula. So the formula is, you know, it's quite straightforward. When Gimo and I were talking about it, again, long before COVID, the conversation started really around, aren't medicines fascinating? You know, and whenever you're eavesdropping on conversations in society, it doesn't take long for people to turn to medicines and a conversation about their medicines of, you know, the impact that they have on people's lives. And so I still think we've got some work to do there around, you know, there's still plenty to go on the treatment burden and the impact of medicines, plus a positive and negative on people's lives. And so I think those stories from maybe patients, and service users could be something for us to consider.
Well, yeah, so one of the, we looked at some podcasts, and one of the one of the models we looked at was the socially distant sports bar podcast, which we do actually, I think we talk about in this week's episode, don't we? It's three blokes talking about sport, and in a way that was one of the ones we modeled it on, you know, with three blokes talking about medicines. They have an audience of hundreds of thousands, and we saw them live on the stage in the new theatre in front of 2,000. So that's got to be a goal, hasn't it, Jamie?
Yeah, well, we talked about live events, didn't we? And festivals and science cafes, and I think they're all possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd quite enjoy some live spin-offs from it. All three of us enjoy and have done teaching and you know, various forms of supporting people. I think that'd be nice. But if I'm honest, it's one of those, let's see where it takes us. Another one of our things from the very beginning was the most important thing about all this was we enjoy it. And if we stop enjoying it, we won't do it.
Is one thing that Steve and I talked about a lot, and we still haven't done it, is Steve and I have known each other for a long time, and we've talked about running workshops together. And, you know, that's still yet to happen. And so I'd still love to sort of get into that space at some point. You know, and so the podcast has been has been great for that, but we haven't still done the face-to-face stuff.
Have you two never run a workshop together?
No.
Okay.
Just like I've never met you. By the way, I feel like
it's just exclusive. It's
just going to say
upon exclusivity.
Yeah. Well, for the record, for exclusivity, we should just say, I don't know if you were going to ask us this, but I think the name is fantastic, and that was Paul's idea. Oral Apothecary is genius, and it was Gimmo's idea. We went through lots and lots of different names, but as soon as he said Oral Apothecary, we're like, that is genius.
I'm trying to think what other names we had. Yours wasn't bad, Steve. Pills, Thrills and Belly Aches, was it?
Well, that was one of the songs, wasn't it? Mine was Present Company Excluded, but I don't think we'll go there. So, it's genius. But what was funny is one day, because I'm really into music, and one day I noticed that there's a bot and there's a company called Oral Apothecary. And it's something to do with records. It's a record company, but they haven't released anything for years and years and years. But sometimes on like a Six Music bot, it'll say this piece of music with the Oral Apothecary. And you think, whoops. But there you go. You know, we own the title now, so.
We're waiting for the cease and desist letter to come through.
Good stuff. Certainly don't want to go. I'm looking forward to turning the tables on you shortly around the questions you normally ask. But I'm certainly not going negative here at all. But one thing I've felt through, you know, running pharmacy in practice over the years is it is an opportunity to tackle. Or I am lucky to have had the opportunity to tackle sort of quite tough issues, you know. So one of the ones we did a couple of years ago was bullying, and we've done with that was sort of sticks in my mind, because some of those articles, one in particular, led to actual change in a large organization. So that was pretty cool, and it was the right thing to do, you know. It started a conversation and all the rest of it. So I suppose two questions, like, how do you choose your editorial? Is it the person or the topic? And would you ever consider, now that you've got a really trusted, loyal follower base or subscriber base, whatever you call them, listener base, would you ever consider tackling some more meaty, difficult issues?
I don't know is the answer. So the way we put the podcast together is editorial stretching it, but we, you know, at the start of the series, we've got a WhatsApp group, is we're trying to pull together. Our theme is medicines, as Jamie often reminds us, and so I don't think we'd get into the sort of some of the things that you might, Jonathan, in terms of, you know, I listen to stuff on bullying and it's very good and it's very powerful, but I just don't think that sort of thing is what, and the politics is what we're about. I think it's about how can we improve medicine's use. And so I think it's, you know, the boys may differ, but my personal view is that's what we stick to and that's what we are. You know, and in that then, as we've said, we do get into some stories about issues that are important to people that may touch on the topics, but we're coming at them from the angle of that person who's experienced them rather than us trying to sort of make a political point. But our aim, both as a podcast and as pharmacists, is to improve medicine's use. So I think that's our limited scope, if you like. That's our scope of practice, to use the terminology. Don't know if anyone disagrees.
We have got braver as we've gone along, though, because I remember when we first started and we had a practice episode, for example, but we spent quite a lot of time talking about subject matters that we might cover. And I think certainly I remember at the beginning, everybody felt a little bit, like I said, about the first episode where we say, look, we don't want to cross a line, but we do want to give an opinion. Otherwise, nobody's going to, you know, what's the point? Yeah. You know, you don't want a football coach answer to a standard question because, you know, you're not going to engage with the podcast. And that's not what we want. So we have opinions. And sometimes we talked recently, didn't we, about free prescriptions, for example, about Wales and Scotland having free prescriptions. And I was giving a counter view and saying, I know I can't give you any evidence for this, but I have this sensation always that there needs to be that people don't value anything that's free. And we had quite a good discussion on the podcast, actually, and it did spill over, didn't it, onto social media. And so I think that was helpful. And I think that so that's perhaps a political. We think we didn't mean to go there, but sometimes we fall into it because we're prepared to give our view. And I would say that at the beginning, we were all, me probably less than the other two, were worried that we might say something about a patient or something that's happened in the past that might get us into trouble. But the more podcasts that you listen to about health professionals, it's quite normal and actually a good thing to talk about examples. And you have to use examples of people that you saw because that's how some of your experiential learning has come from, isn't it? So I think we've become a lot more confident about that. Do you think, Jay?
Yeah. And, you know, the topics sort of pick themselves in a sense to, you know, because there's so many topics out there and we do one podcast. We've gone out to, now that life has got back a little bit back to normal, we've gone to one podcast every fortnight. So we were churning them out every week, so that's a slightly different feel. I think we probably, the three of us are each trying to produce a different podcast, which I quite like that about us. You know, we've each got our own plant and we don't discuss it too much. And so that's why I think it comes out, you know, quite sort of, we're not all on the same page all the time. And so I, you know, I think Steve obviously is a frontline clinician.
Am I?
As he mentions every week.
Just for the viewers. just for the viewers. I'm quite interested in bringing it back, rightly or wrongly, to a lay. You know, I'm still convinced that even though it's interesting to healthcare professionals, I go running every, you know, I do the park run every Saturday morning and I sit down and have a coffee with about, you know, half a dozen sort of mates who all listen to it. They're not in health at all. And they all love it. Obviously, there's a bit of vested interest because they're, you know, they're friends, but they actually engage with the topics. They're patients at the end of the day as well. And so I still think that that's quite a nice aspect of it as well. And Gimmo comes at it from another perspective to me and Steve as well.
That's a good observation, actually, Jamie. I hadn't quite thought of it like that. And because one of the things I remember was there was a tweet a while back, I think, Lisa Riley, who's someone who had left pharmacy for and take up a career as a dog walker, I think. And so what you're touching on, Jonathan, and there's a lot of unhappiness out there, there's a lot of stress, there's a lot of dissatisfaction with the profession of pharmacy, all stuff I've touched on in my career many times. But what was nice was she said, oh, it's made me want to get back into pharmacy again. And that goes back to what Jamie said, was medicines are fascinating. And that's what I like about it is we're talking about a really fascinating topic. And you're right, Jamie, it's not just fascinating for pharmacists and prescribers, it's hopefully fascinating for the wider public as well.
Mm. I think it not being scripted, and going back to this point about us being conversationalists, is the key to why I think it feels natural, because it is natural.
Yeah. It is, you know, if we did meet in a pub and we were having that first drink, you know, we joked that that's the type of conversation, you know, quite, you know, maybe dull for a lot of people, but that is a conversation that we would get onto quite quickly, I would imagine. Mm. I did say, Jonathan, when we first started and we had the "it's a bit blokey" comment come in, I'd said, well, it does actually reflect my early pub experience, which was I would go to the pub with a load of pharmacists. A lady might come on, join us for 10 minutes. We talk pharmacy and then they'd leave. So that was my formative years.
No, it's interesting how it, you know, I've really enjoyed being a listener myself of, you know, I'm out doing whatever, doing the garden or wherever I am, working away, you know, listening along is quite nice. And the sort of thought behind that question was, it's interesting to me that there's three of you, because there's just one of me. And my worry often, and reflection, is even though I'm sort of publishing stuff often vicariously through other people, and having contributors and so on, I wonder, is it just a bit of a boring extension of myself, you know? And I wouldn't like to think that was just sort of all my agenda, you know. You've got to stay really open-minded, don't you?
I think, as we just discussed, there's podcasts for different people, aren't there? So people tune in for a subject matter that they want to hear about, and they're prepared to invest the time to listen to it, because if they didn't, they wouldn't listen. So you've got loads of followers. We've got, you know, a fair number of followers, and the other people that we know, we've got on a guy called James McCormack, who's from Canada. I don't know if you know him. And he and his sort of GP in Canada friend, they've nearly done 500 podcasts. They started in 2008.
Wow.
So we took some of our inspiration. I certainly took some of my inspiration from their podcast. So there's a podcast for everybody, isn't there? And there's a podcast about everything.
That's the thing about podcasts. You'll only listen to it if you like it. You know, we've had more who probably haven't listened when we look at the figures of the first couple of episodes and how it goes through, than have. And it's great, because what it means is the people who listen are people who enjoy it.
Yeah, and the numbers of listeners, we can pretty much tell that people listen in order. So when we look at, you know, how many listens has each episode has, it starts at number one, and pretty much there's the odd episode that might have been outstanding with an outstanding person who then brought a lot of their own followers. But generally speaking, if you look at the figures, they all just fall down. So, you know, in line. So people, like you said, they don't listen for ages, and then they go, oh, I've got an hour cutting the lawn or whatever today. Oh, I don't know, I'll do two episodes of The Oral Apothecary. So, and they tend to pick up where they left off.
It's interesting. I've noticed similar behavior on Pharmacy and Practice as well. It's quite different to when you publish articles, and articles often, an opinion piece, for example, is quite standalone. But you've got a thread of, you know, you guys are really good at doing that thread of a theme. And Jimmy obviously keeps you right, because he's in charge. So
he does. I told you,
he keeps you.
maybe we should go for that soap. Maybe we should go more for that soap opera angle. That's not a bad idea.
Maybe. Anyway, right, here we go. Let's do. This was the bit I was looking forward to, actually. Now that we've sort of rambled for a bit about nothing in particular, so I want to turn the tables on you, if that's all right, if I may. And one of the lovely things about, for those of, you know, but that's the other thing. Hopefully we're, you know, hopefully people are tuning into this session that I've never heard the Oral Apothecaries before. So if you've never, you know, tuned into them, one of the things they do on there is they ask their guest what is their desert island drug and what memory does it evoke. They ask them for a career anthem, and they ask for a book recommendation. So I must admit, when I was a guest, which it was absolutely lovely to be, I was I was really nervous, really, like, very nervous. So they're not, you know, it sounds like a bit of fun, this, but it's actually quite an illuminating procedure, if you know what I mean, because, all those three things put together sort of can potentially give away quite a lot about a person and their ethos and their experiences and so on. So who would like to go first?
Steve, I can't remember your drug, but I remember that your music was Girl from Mars by Ash, was it not?
Yep, correct. Yeah.
And I remember that the book was really unusual, and it was the something trousered for
the ragged trousered philanthropist.
Thank you.
And I'm going to take a guess. Was it Bentlin? Salbutamol? Was it? Was yours salbutamol?
No.
It was Renitidine. So the Girl from Mars, Ash was the first concert that I went to in Northern Ireland with my brother. And that was just pure lovely memory. That was all. There's nothing more complicated to it. And the Ranitidine was just my favourite drug. I mean, that's just, it just works a treat. And I miss it dearly.
Jonathan, the interesting things is that now, not a day goes by really without somebody coming up to, turning to me and saying, oh, really, how much they enjoy it and things like that. And also, people have given thought to their own desert island drug, their career anthem and their book. And a few people, when we've sort of asked them to come on, they've actually told us, oh, I said, I've got all my choices. They said, would you like to come on then? They said, oh, no, I couldn't possibly. Yet they've got their choices sorted. So, it sparked some interest out there as well.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, you're itching to have a go. So what's your, let's go for the desert island drug first.
Okay. So I think I may have mentioned this on the Oral Apothecary at some point during the last 23 episodes, but my desert island drug is Orlistat, okay? And it's got two reasons, really. So my dad was a pharmacist and my mum was a teacher. And when people say, do you think you ended up in the right job? I always say, absolutely. I pretty much, for most of my career, have loved my job. Okay, and I've always done a bit of everything. I get bored if I do the same thing. So I had the pleasure of actually teaching both undergraduates and postgraduates at the University of Manchester School of Pharmacy. And there's nothing nicer than people coming up to you years afterwards, bumping into you when we used to meet people at a conference and them saying, oh, I remember when you taught us and I remember what you told us about X, Y, and Z. And so I've actually got two reasons for picking Orlistat. And the first one is that actually when I used to teach, I used to remember when I used to get taught at university, the things that I would remember because the lecturer would make it interesting. And so Orlistat is such an interesting drug because of how it works. And that essentially, there's no systemic absorption. You take it, it goes straight into your gastrointestinal tract. And guess what? If you eat a high fat diet, you're going to soil your underpants. And so I found it very easy to explain that, if you like, because it's potentially funny, but it meant that students, I think, really understood. But rather than just focusing on the soiled underpants, the other reason why I like it is I used to say to them, it's because for me, it's a truth drug. So I had genuinely worked in the diabetic clinic for many years, and lots of overweight and obese type 2 diabetics have had some fantastic results on Orlistat because they learn that if they don't eat three packets of crisps together when they're taking their Orlistat, they won't soil their underpants. And the reason why it's a truth drug is those patients who come back to me and would say, nah, it's definitely not working for me. I've lost no weight whatsoever. I know that they're not taking it. So they learn that if you don't take it, you can still have your three packets of crisps or your curry or your fish and chips. And those are the people that don't lose weight. So I love it. It's a truth drug. Pretty much doesn't have any other side effects apart from local. What's not to like?
Why is it not more popular, Steve? It's not one of the ones you hear about so much these days, is it? This high on the formulary, or is it? I might be out of touch.
Well, no, it's because, like all drugs, and as you know, we did an episode talking about weight loss drugs, but it's because if people can't stick to it, So the point is, you know, there's lots of ways that people lose a lot of weight, isn't there? But unfortunately, they flip-flop, don't they? So if you go back to eating a high-fat diet, you then choose not to take the orlistat, and therefore you therefore don't lose weight. So I think it's a great drug, and I say it's a truth drug, and I used to love using it as a, in a teaching purposes.
Very good.
Do you want to have somebody else's? Should we do all the desert island drugs together? Jamie's itching to get
his.
Mine's
not been heard, so not many people know this this story really. So I'm going to take you back to the 90s, okay? And as a clinical pharmacist in a district general hospital in South Wales. The clinical diploma was a new beast, just in its second iteration. There were only 6 diploma posts in Wales at that time. So I was very fortunate to have got one of the diploma posts. And so I was studying for my clinical diploma. My clinical mentors, who I'm going to give a mention to, look, my pre-reg tutor was John Terry, and one of my clinical mentors, and Bob Morris. And this was a district general that was sort of overachieving in terms of its clinical pharmacy output. And as part of the diploma, we had to go to UHW, University Hospital Wales, the big teaching hospital, every fortnight. And we turn up and we did feel like the poor relations coming in from the district general. Our cases never quite felt good enough when we presented them back to the group. And so that's the context of it. And so I'm very fortunate that throughout the 90s, my clinical teaching from in particular, John and Bob, was absolutely stunning. Anyway, 1994, we had a case in. We had a young lad had been playing rugby, and he'd been substituted at halftime, or he'd come off at halftime, and he went to take a drink, and the coach, and this is before health and safety had gone big time. The coach had stored the oil of wintergreen in a pop bottle. Mm. And so the young lad, 14, I think, came off and was absolutely gasping. And so he went to take a drink, and he'd swilled down a couple of gulps of oil of wintergreen. And so then he presented to Princess of Wales Hospital in South Wales, and no internet in those days, look. Yeah. So this was a Martindale job. This was thumb through Martindale to find out. That was the best we had. And I think Micromedics might have been on a PC somewhere, you know. And it turns out that 5 mil of wintergreen contains the equivalent of 20 300 milligram aspirin tablets. So it contains a whack of methyl salicylate. So anyway, this was the case, and Bridgend looked after the young man for a few days, and then he was transferred to the teaching hospital. Then eventually, I presented the case on the diploma round a couple of times actually, and that was fine. Anyway, this very attractive junior doctor then came to the pharmacy. And I'd heard a rumor that I'd presented this quirky case. And if you look at that, you know, there's a whole raft of stuff that goes on with salicylate poisoning, obviously. Mm. And, you know, there was Jane, there's somebody to see you at the pharmacy hatch. And so I went, and so this, again, attractive junior doctor asked if she could borrow my case to present to the grand round. But what we really know that she wanted, and so that, you know, she is now my wife. We have 3 grown-up lads, and so that was. So we met over a toxicology case.
There was 2 victims in that story, Jamie.
Oil of wintergreen is my desert island drug, and I've, you know, never forgotten the patient who made a full recovery, and those clinical times, early part of my career, and meeting my wife.
Bravo.
Very good. Well, you impressed her then, and I'm sure continued to do so afterwards.
She's never listened to the Oral Apothecary podcast.
My wife hasn't either. She's listened to the odd episode. Then it's too much like work.
Well, what about you?
So I think I talked about mine in the first episode where I'd very possibly pick another one now, because I think at the time when we were new, I wasn't discussing something I quite had an emotional attachment with. So I think I'd probably pick something different. But in that episode, I talked about aspirin. And the reason I talk about aspirin is just throughout my career, I've been a bit of a pharmacy nerd. You know, like Stick a Rock, if you cut me, it's got pharmacy through me. And I did try and almost leave the profession a few years ago and always kept getting drawn back in. So aspirin, I just think, encompasses everything I loved about pharmacy. It's got a fascinating history. It's got a multitude of uses. It's got an interesting chemistry. It sort of encapsulates, I think, what people who get into pharmacy, we've got that mix of medical interest and chemical interest, I suppose. So aspirin was just a drug, I think, that encapsulates that love of it all.
Very good, very good. Lovely, lovely stories, everyone. What about the one I'm looking forward to is the book recommendation, to be honest. But what about a career anthem, first of all, and then we'll do the book?
Well, Paul, you go first, Paul.
Oh, Paul, first. Go for it.
So mine is again, this was the choice I'd made on the first one when maybe I hadn't quite got the question. But it's a song I used to like, and it links to pharmacy, and it's one every pharmacist knows, is The Verve and The Drugs Don't Work. So I think I like it for the sort of the boring, nerdy reasons that we're pharmacists, and here's a song that mentions the drugs. But actually, it's quite a melancholic track. And I think, I'm trying to think when it was out, was it sort of early 90s, Steve, was it? Something like that?
Mid to late 90s, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, so it was a time when... So the Verve are from... Well, they're famously from Wigan, but actually they're from Up Holland, which is the next town along from where I'm from originally, which is Skelmersdale. And so when the Verve became famous, sort of, everyone in Skelmersdale sort of said that they knew them, or they went to school with them, and you know, or they had a story about them. So when I was down in Cardiff, and I think that was probably about the time when I realised I was never going back home, and I was here in Wales for good. And so it was a song that was, you know, talked to me about pharmacy, but it was also a link back home. And of course, when a song like that comes on, it's an opportunity to talk about the job that you do with people. And so it was, you know, it's a pharmacy song, but it's also a song that is a bit melancholic and has a nice connection. It makes me feel homesick when I listen to it.
It is a great track. And just for the listener, actually, if you are interested, the Oral Apothecary does actually have a genuine playlist. So every guest that's been on, if you go on Spotify, you'll find the Oral Apothecary playlist as well as the podcast itself. And the first track actually on there is Mr. Pharmacist by The Fall, just because it had to be.
I was listening to it before, and the track that came on after the Verve was Bach and the cello in D minor, whatever it was.
It's very eclectic.
So it's a good mix.
It's very eclectic.
From heavy rock to sort of 16th century Baroque.
Yeah. James, you go next, because my reasons are a little bit similar to yours, and you'll tell it better than me.
My Sweet Child of Mine is mine by Guns N' Roses, and it's my go-to motivational song, has been for as long as I can remember. And when Steve and I lived together in college for 3 years, and when House of Seven lads, and so when it came to exam time, for example, we would be getting ready, and it was part of that motivational preparation. So we were into this performance for a long time. You were in it. You had, I think, about, you know, you're allowed to play your anthem at full blast while you were in the shower, getting ready for an exam. And so that took a lot of coordinating because there were seven of us, three pharmacists, a couple of engineers. So if we did have any clashes, but it was respected. It was there was a code and it was respected. So you knew that as we were getting ready, we would play it full blast. So Sweet Child of Mine is my anthem. The other thing that's come out over the podcast over the last 20 of episodes, which again is I used to revise to Richard Clayderman. And
I can't believe you're telling people.
And so and again, there's an evidence base for this, Jonathan. Okay, if you look up, not to actually Richard Clayderman, but revising to music, and whether the music has lyrics or not, there is an evidence base to that. And so, you know, if I played Richard Clayderman now, I would probably be able to dig deep and recite my O levels and my A levels, because I always revise to it.
Okay, so there's an association. A connection gone on in there, and some wiring has been set up somewhere along the line.
Long before we knew what wiring was.
Yeah. So like Jamie's, my pick for my career anthem is also the song that I used to play when I was allowed to go in the shower, and that was Dignity by Deacon Blue. And I went to see Deacon Blue when they came to Cardiff University in 1988, I think it was, 89, 88, I think. And so like Jamie, I use it all the time. And in fact, I had my 50th birthday last year, and it is my favorite track of all time, not just my career anthem. And I had a band, even though we were in the middle of COVID, genuinely, we were allowed a minimum number of people in the garden. And I had a band in my back room, and then it played out onto the garden. And I said to them, look, what I'd really, really like to do is to sing along to Dignity. So the two of them, the drummer and the guitarist. And so I got to make an absolute of myself singing Dignity, because it is such a great song. Obviously, Ricky Ross, and it's proper for me. It's a proper star. It's got the piano in the middle. It's got a massive drums at the end. And you can just belt your heart out to it at all times. But when I was reflecting, as I heard more stories on the Oral Apothecary, I realized that actually the guitarist who was at my party, who saw me then maybe a couple of weeks later, and he said to me, oh, you're a bit, you know, plastered when you tried to sing Dignity. I thought it was quite funny, he said, because you're a professional person and you're trying to sing about Dignity and you're falling all over the place. And I realized that actually, if you listen to the lyrics, it's really powerful about, I suppose, what I've learned from working in healthcare, which is that, and the story, as you'll know, is it's a street cleaner who doesn't say anything to anybody, packs his sandwiches in a Sunbless bag, and eventually he has a plan, and he doesn't tell anybody, but he buys a boat and he calls it Dignity. And the point I want to make is that everybody has a backstory. Even if they don't tell you about it, everybody's got stuff going on. And I think I've learned that from working in healthcare. And I really respect that. So I think the Dignity part of it is actually bigger than the fact that it's my favourite song.
Great, lovely, yeah. That really good advice, actually, as well. You've got to give people space and not make assumptions, I guess, when they present to you. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Did you have Richard Clayderman at your 50th?
Sorry?
What?
Did you have Richard Clayderman at your 50th?
Jamie...
I wouldn't say no. There's a piano in the house. I can't play a musical note, but I have played the piano live to 150 people many years ago. But that's a story for another time.
It didn't involve Julia.
Jamie, I'm going to help you. I'm going to help you out here, Jamie, and move on. Okay. Last but not least, book recommendations then. Who wants to go first?
Go on, Jamie, you haven't gone first yet. We're very fair on the Oral Apothecary.
Yeah, very fair. And so my book recommendation, and I have mentioned it is a book called Freedom from Command and Control by John Seddon. And I did an MBA in sort of 2010, 2011. It was an MBA based on a lot of the Toyota work and lean thinking and so lean healthcare in particular. And John Seddon is one of the critics of lean thinking, and he introduced me to the term failure demand. And when I realized and aligned that with healthcare, I realized that the system is just full of failure demand, and especially around medicines. It was, you know, that we say we're going to do things and things are going to arrive and they don't. And so if you find yourself progress chasing, and especially when, you know, this was 10 years ago now, looking at the discharge service 10 years ago, that was when you put the failure demand goggles on in healthcare, you can't help but see the, you know, the ineffectiveness and the inefficiency in the system. And so John talks about, you know, that we're very good at doing wrong things righter. That, you know, so that's the, yeah, so, you know, we can be we're very efficient. We can have efficiency drives, but actually we're doing the wrong thing in the first place. Yeah. And that we get very good at doing the wrong thing. And so over the years, failure demand and progress chasing have stuck with me. And you still see it everywhere. And Gimmo and I have done some work together on that in a big practice in South Wales. And that was probably one of the most rewarding projects that I've been involved in. We spent 8 days in a general practice, a real luxury, and took some resource with us, an expert facilitator with us. We took a cardiologist with us. We took locum help with us. And we got some, you know, we analysed the system and we got some data out of it. And it was stunning. But yeah, freedom from command and control. And for anybody interested in quality improvement and systems, if you haven't read it yet, it's I'd say it's essential reading.
Excellent, excellent, very interesting. And is it a book that just, I mean, I'll go and read it now, obviously, but is it a book that just sort of makes that point about failure demand, or is it one that offers, you know, methodology and tools to progress?
No, he offers, so John Seddon is in charge of the Vanguard method that many people will be familiar with, and he offers up his own system for service organisations. So Lean was obviously manufacturing, and so Professor John Seddon brings to the service industry, service organisations, that thinking. So yeah, very much a practical, operational book as well.
I used it this very day teaching about polypharmacy and the repeat prescription system about failure demand. And am I right in thinking, Jane, that John Seddon did the work when everything went to telebanking and they couldn't work out why all of a sudden they thought, yeah, we'll go to telebanking. Then they had more queries than they ever had than when they were in the high street because of the system and how rubbish, and it didn't answer the actual question that the people wanted. And I think that's where one of his things that he got involved with, wasn't it, Jane?
Yeah, and John is a very, you know, I think Marmite character, I think, because when he goes into an organisation, he asks, you know, tough questions and he ruffles feathers around, you know, if this is your system. So he's, you can see him on YouTube as well, and he's a great speaker. But some really, you know, in terms of systems for healthcare, yeah, fantastic.
Well, I suppose that makes sense, because if you've made if you've built your career on failing or being very good at failing, then someone coming in and correcting, that's going to be a bit annoying, I guess. Steve, did you want to go next?
Oh no, I didn't. Sorry, I didn't know if I crashed. Paul, were you going to say something, Gimmo?
No, sorry.
You go with your book then, because I think I've given mine, and I'm not sure if you've given yours before.
So mine, mine was Better. A Surgeon's Notes on Performance by Atul Gawande. So lots of you will have heard of Atul Gawande. I think he's done the Reith lecture, Steve, he's done, and what's the one that the BBC do at Christmas? Oh, that's the Reith ones, isn't it?
That's, yeah,
and, he's a columnist in the New Yorker and prolific speaker. But so this book called Better, it's a sort of, it's a bit of a tale of his time as a surgeon and some of the epiphanies he had and some of the experiences he had that led him into, I suppose, a career of writing and thought, hate the phrase, but thought leadership and improvement. And so the premise of this book is better is possible. It does not take genius. It takes diligence. It takes moral clarity. It takes ingenuity. And above all, it takes a willingness to try. And so around the time I read it, which was, I'm guessing, but about 10 years ago, I was a bit fed up in pharmacy because, you know, all through my career, we'd been talking about things like 50% of hospital admissions are due to medicines errors, you know, falls are due to medicines errors, asthma's poorly treated due to poor use of medicines. And that narrative wasn't changing, and, you know, you could argue isn't changing. And so, you know, on the one hand, when you hear stuff like that, you think, great, it's my job as a pharmacist to do something about this. But also there's an element of, I suppose, guilt or shame that actually this is our fault. If 50% of people are getting admitted to hospital because of medicines errors, and we at the time, and I was at the society, are campaigning everywhere that we're the experts in medicines, you know, that was our strap line. Well, then it's our fault. You know, if we're the experts in medicines and 50% of people have been admitted to hospital. So I think Better came along with a growing sort of me discovering the sort of stuff that Jamie's talking about, sort of, you know, systems theory, quality improvement, service improvement, various different methods and ways, and then complexity and other stuff. And so to me, it opened up a new way of perhaps trying to improve the system as opposed to sort of traditional ways that we used to do, which was come up with protocols and guidance. And so it was a different way of trying to improve the system. So the reason I picked it is it's probably one of the things, if not the thing, that sort of sparked a career change for me. So people who listen might not realize I'm not a practicing pharmacist in many ways. I work in service and quality improvement. And so this was one of the things that sparked that change in career. And it's a good read as well.
Good read, yeah. I think from memory, when I was on the podcast, we had a bit of a discussion about that assertion around pharmacists being experts, in inverted commas, in medicines.
We did.
It's a bit of a... Was it Steve and I? Steve's piping up there. I think maybe we had a bit of a tete-a-tete, shall we say, yeah. A bit of a lover's tiff.
No, well, actually, going back to your point about how political have we been, your episode actually was quite, you know, because you're obviously, you know, we listen to your podcast as well, and you don't hold back, do you? So you say what you think, and, you know, you bring out then people to come back to you. So I probably did come back to you a little bit. But also what I remember was that it was the same episode where we talked about internet pharmacy, because it was when Amazon had just started getting involved in pharmacy. And actually, we all, I think, I remember the discussion at the end, we all actually agreed, although we might have sort of, you know, teetered around it a little bit, we all actually came to the final conclusion, which is, actually, guys, community pharmacy has got to change, because you've got this big truck coming towards you, and there is a need for change. I think that's absolutely fine.
But do you know, I'm gonna sort of draw to a close, because you've been very generous with your time. But I was speaking to you know, one of the sessions in the conference has been with Catherine Duggan, and it's, you know, it speaks a lot to what you were saying there, Steve. I went into this is our first ever go at a conference, you know, and really wet behind the ears, I guess, go into it open minded. But it's really interesting when you put together an agenda and start down that route, themes do emerge, and it's really positive. So one of the themes is sort of what you just said there around, like, you know, it's okay to disagree, you know, it's like we don't need to exist in our echo chambers. And I think, you know, that was a lot of the reason why I invited you on and you kindly agreed, was because I think the oral apothecary really is so positive, gentle, honest, but quite firm in fact and opinion as well, you know. And actually, like, so what, we disagreed, but I mean, you know, life in general needs to go a lot more towards polite disagreement and consensus building, you know. And bringing it back to finish, you know, I suppose I'll go around the houses if you want to comment again. But, you know, in pharmacy, I think it's about, and I spoke to Catherine about this, it's about finding, you know, that golden, like that thread of what it means to be a member of a group or a well, really the profession, you know, like we're all on the same team when it comes down to that lowest common denominator. We're all pharmacists. So anything out with that is up for debate. And I think, you know, debate, fallout, but at the end of the day, we're family, you know. Would you guys agree with that? Is that a positive sort of way to finish?
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan, I just recommended another book on a conference just last week. The book was called Belonging, and it was a deep dive into what it is to belong to a group or a tribe. Quite spiritual at times, not necessarily religious, but spiritual, by Owen Eastwood, a Kiwi, a New Zealander. And yeah, that's what you describe is belonging. And it comes with, they don't always have to be happy camps, you know, productive disagreement. And as long as the conflict's not personal, the conflict is about the issue. Yeah, that's what the edge is, isn't it? You know, and that's what we try, you know, and we don't always succeed on our podcast, but that's what we're striving for. It's like the perfect wave, Jonathan.
but it goes back to the point about why we talk about it as being like pub chat, because, you know, if you go to the pub with people that you know, or even people that you don't know, you do tend to have a discussion, don't you? And people, you'll find somebody on the table or whatever who does have a slightly obtuse view, but you will listen, and then you will maybe come back to them, and then somebody else will chip in. So I go back to this point about, you know, when we started, the guys didn't like this strap line, but I was saying, hey, we could say between the three of us, the three apothecaries, we've got over 100 years of experience working with medicines. And actually we have. But the point being that we've all been involved in so many conversations and so much conflict and situations that there isn't anything that we haven't probably between, you know, any of us hasn't come up against in one way, shape or form. And so, again, I think it goes back to why it kind of works, because we think of it as a conversation, I think.
I think something just came to my mind, and I don't know whether this is a compliment or not, but it, like, the oral apothecary, you know, the whole ethos behind it, it's, I don't know if you feel like this, but it, looking in from the outside, it's things that come to mind are like, you know, self-actualization, you know, acceptance, you know, calm. I get where you're coming from, Steve. That is the image you exude, and maybe that's where I'm a bit different, because it feels like I still have urgent itches to scratch as I need to come to Jamie's coaching services and get sorted out.
It's funny actually, because I think in the background I quite enjoy listening to Steve and Gimmo about Steve about his clinical activities. And I'm there thinking about the coaching that underpins a lot of, you know, those interactions that take place in the workplace, those influencing moments. You know, your episode on bullying, that's a coaching scenario effectively as well, isn't it? You know, and, you know, we've mentioned psychological safety on the podcast a few times. We still have, you know, and we could mention it every episode, I suspect, because the guests come on and share their stories. They're incredibly human stories. And actually, that's what it's, so I feel quite sort of privileged in that sense to be there listening with a coaching hat on sometimes to what's going on.
Very good. Very good. Listen, it's been really brilliant speaking to you. Steve, are you wanting to come in?
Just for the record, do you want my book choice?
I've been sitting there waiting for that.
how rude, total disaster. This was the big moment, and I glossed over it
this is what happens on the podcast. This is what happens on the podcast if we don't stick to the script that Steve's laid out. He's sort of tweeting and shouting at us to stick to the plan.
So Steve's clearly going to get very upset if we don't hear what his book is. So, Steve, no, the floor is yours. But
you can take it out or you can edit it in. That's fine. So, like Paul, I've actually picked an Atul Gawande book, because, like Paul, I'm very impressed by Atul Gawande as a person and the way that he writes and his you know, all the things that he's done, not just in health, but, you know, he worked in the Bill Clinton administration around healthcare. So he's one hell of a guy. And I've also seen him speak myself. But the book that I've chosen and the one that I want to give to the Oral Apothecary book list is Being Mortal, Medicine and What Matters in the End. And if you've never read it, and like Jamie, what I should do now is hold up on the video a copy. And there's a reason why I'm saying this, because when I went to go and get my copy, I realized that, like many, many times, I've lent it to somebody and it hasn't come back. And it's the sort of book that actually anyone that I come across, perhaps starting off in healthcare or people that I know who've got children who are going off to university to do healthcare subjects, I say to them, you must read this book. And it's one of those books. And I also, as you know, on the podcast, I talk a lot about, I listen to a lot of podcasts from Freakonomics, the Freakonomics guy, Stephen Dubner. And he had one recently and he was talking about books. And because Jamie reads a lot of books, I don't read a huge number. And they said, oh, is it embarrassing if you can't remember exactly what the book was about? And they discussed that actually, and I think Jamie will like this, is that you can, it can be so, it can be just as powerful that you know that that's the book that you know where you bought it, or you feel real pleasure in giving it to somebody else to read. And that's what I think as a clinician for 30 years, and this whole kind of ethos where we're now getting to a point where perhaps we're becoming a bit obsessed with trying to increase people's length of life without forgetting that it's actually about quality of life. And so the book itself, and he reflects on his father's death in India, is this idea that we must give people a good death. And we mustn't, you know, be offering futility. We mustn't offer futile treatments. And it's very, very powerful because he's so good at writing what he talks about, and because he's so eminent in what he said. So if you've never read it, then please do take the time to look it out. Atul Gawande, Being Mortal, Medicine and What Matters in the End.
He's not such a great bloke, my Jonathan, Atul Gawande, because I invited him on the podcast and he never replied.
I had a reply on Atul Gawande once.
When Steve was talking about his book there, you looked around and checked your bookshelf. Were you worried that he'd lent it to you?
No, I was seeing if I could just, I've got lots of books to my left. I was just seeing if I could I could ping it for the viewers and hold it up. But I'm guessing, I hope a lot of people tuning this have already read it.
Yeah.
And to plug an episode, it chimes with what we talked to Professor Mark Tobert about. So, you know, he encapsulates what we love in that he's a palliative care consultant and also one of the funniest guys you'll ever meet. And you know, you wouldn't think the two went together. He practices, you know, humor is a massive part of his practice, which you think wouldn't go together with a palliative care consultant, but it's actually humanity, isn't it? And you know, that I think a lot of what we talked to Mark about is sort of what runs through Being Mortal, isn't it, Steve?
Absolutely. And he picked me up. Do you remember Mark Tobert? It was a great episode and lots of people do say how much they love it. But remember, I got tongue-tied and he was talking about the difference between ceiling of treatment and ceiling of care. So there should never be a ceiling of care, but there should be a ceiling of treatment. And again, it's very topical because that guy that's just been found guilty at the GMC, Dr. Justin Stebbings, who's been offering futile treatments to people with, you know, terminal cancer. So, yeah, very powerful book. If you've not read it, it's definitely worth a read.
Excellent. Okay. And I've done my, before I forgot Steve's book choice, I'd done my wrap up, but I'll do it again. Thank you very, Liz, thank you very much for coming on. Really enjoyed it. To be honest, you have so much experience. I'm not saying you're all old. Something occurred to me actually, Jamie, when you were speaking. In 1994, I was 9.
There you go. 100 years.
I think that was the year I registered, 94.
Yeah, that's the year I got my diploma and met my
I'm sure that's the year I registered.
Brilliant. Well, on that bombshell, I'll end it and just say thank you very much for coming on. Been brilliant. Really enjoyed it. And I'd love to see you in person at some stage.
Pleasure. Thanks for inviting us on, Jonathan. Very good.
Thanks, Jonathan. Good luck with it. Very good.